It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It's time for California Wine Country on this Wine Wednesday, brought to you by Hop Monk and, of course, by Bottle Barn, where Wine Country buys their wine. In fact, Barry Herbst is walking in the studio as we speak, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. Barry, good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
All right. And, of course, my co-host on California Wine Country, Dan Berger, also comedian and Drive Hall of Famer Steve Osborne, is with us from Thumbprint Cellars. Dude.
What's happening?
And we're going to talk about a new comedy show coming up at the Thumbprint and one at Provisions.
That is correct, yeah.
The menswear, my favorite menswear place in Montgomery Village. So I'll let Dan Berger introduce our guest.
Clark Smith's with us. Clark is has been in this county forever and a day, and one of the most inventive and creative winemakers. He is this is known as Geek Central with Clark. Everything he talks about is geeky, but he's really got a brilliant history as a winemaker, and a lot of his wines are esoteric and interesting. And if it isn't interesting, Clark's not interested in it.
Welcome, dude.
Thanks.
Give us your history as a wine guy and the history of Winesmith.
Oh, well, I'm basically an MIT dropout from the 60s, wanted out to California, got a job in a liquor store.
We hear that all the time.
So, you know, in 1971, there were only 250 wineries in the United States, and we had all the wine. We had, like, the Library of Congress at Jackson's for about 1,000 wines. That wouldn't even be 1% of the wine that's out there now. We have about 25,000 wineries in the U.S. Most of them are local. They don't get any distribution. And that retail shelf is now occupied by, you know, multi-million dollar wineries. But I'm very, very interested in people that will basically throw their lives away. You know, they could have been dentists or lawyers or something, but they throw their lives into making unique products that you can't buy at Safeway.
So after MIT, you come out here, and I assume you're making these wines.
I sold wine for 7 years, and then in 1977, I went to work in the wine industry, went to Davis, finished up, got a couple of degrees there. And then I built R.H. Phillips in the 80s, and in 1990, I started Winesmith Consulting. I ended up inventing, like, the reverse osmosis methodologies for adjusting alcohol. We have a real problem in California that our air is too dry, and so our alcohols tend to run away with us. And so I developed a filtration method for pulling the alcohols down.
Wow.
And that sort of made us a magnet for European technologies what we call micro-oxygenation, which is basically how you make chocolate from cocoa powder using that chocolate waterfall in Willy Wonka. They really have those. and so refining tannins and trying to make ultimately wines that have structure to last.
I warned you, Steve. It is Geek Central.
I love it. I love it. In fact, in 1984, you began teaching a short course at UC Davis called Fundamentals of Wine Chemistry.
Yeah, I just did it last weekend.
You're a chemist.
That was my 52nd time of doing that class. Put about 4,000 American winemakers through that class.
Wow. Wine chemistry?
Well, I'm. It's funny. What makes wine great is not its chemistry. In the same way, you know, people think that you could just take all the chemicals that are in a wine, put it together, and it would taste like a wine. But if you think about ask the same question about a lump of coal, a graphite tennis racket, and a diamond. They're all 100% carbon, but it's the structure, it's the architecture, the way they're put together.
I love this.
Makes them different. And that's what I play around with in wine.
Wow. And what kind of wines are you making at Winesmith? And where do you make them? I mean, you have your own winery, or you?
I don't. I had a company called Vinovation, and we put many of.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, that was a technology company, and I made Winesmith kind of over in the corner. I kind of got tired of babysitting and doing all the paperwork and stuff like that. So now I do, like a lot of winemakers, Custom Crush. We're out at Owl Ridge in Sebastopol,
right,
and several other wineries around the state. I make. My idea is that California is a better place to make French wines than France is, and so I'm really interested.
Really?
Yeah.
I love hearing that.
That would go over well over there.
I make a Chardonnay called Fauchebly. You're going to show another wine here that's kind of an attempt to move that way in Carneros. I'm really interested in sulfite-free wines that age really well. I make a Cabernet called Crucible that I think is a lot like a first-growth Pauillac, like Chateau Latour, Chateau Lafite. I'm going to show you tonight. I'm kind of the king of Cabernet Franc, and Dan was kind enough to name my 2010 as the top Cabernet Franc in the United States. And
wow!
Down to Australia.
And we're going to have that tonight.
Yeah, we'll taste that.
It's a fabulous one.
And I've got a Russian River Pinot that's 8 years in old French oak. So I like to make impossible things.
Only Clark would do this.
This is very cool. Now, Dan, you brought in something that we've had before with it's Jackson family
this
wine.
Is, yeah, this is called Chardonnay, and it's spelled Chardennet, the old French spelling of the grape variety. And so Jackson sort of made this project. It's from the Carneros Hills Winery, and it's from the Carneros District, and it sells for $45 a bottle, and it's sort of up the lines of what Clark likes to do. It's a little Chardonnay-like, but a little Chablis-like, too.
I love this, and I have had it before, yeah. One of the times Jackson family wines were in. Chardonnay, we called it. But it's, Barry, is this available at Bottle Barn?
It is on and off. I don't think it's in there right now, but we carry most of the Jackson family things, so
sure.
If it's not there now, it'll probably be there in the next week or two.
Dan, tell me why I like this so much.
Well, I think that the purity of the wine comes from the fact that there's a little delicate citrusy note in the aftertaste. And I think the most important thing here is the oak was kept fairly delicate. It's plenty. There's enough of it to notice that it's there.
Yeah.
But in the aftertaste, it's gone.
You're
and
right.
To me, this is really a food-oriented wine. And this is exactly what Clark loves to do. And so we sort of play footsie with that style of wine with you guys.
Well, I think what really makes this wine work is that the alcohol is not excessive. So, you know, that lemon oil that is characteristic of Carneros Chardonnay is completely masked in most California Chardonnays, partly by the oak and so forth, but the bitterness that comes through from excessive alcohol is really a problem.
Yeah, 13.5 on this, so it's really an alcoholic, it's restrained alcohol, shall we call it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they've dialed it back. I don't know exactly whether they use technology for that or not, but the stuff seems ripe. So my guess is, yes, that they pulled the alcohol out to a
very,
point.
Very nice
what
point.
Year is this?
2013 just
yeah,
released.
It's plenty just ready to age yeah, for a good long while, yeah. And they just released it, so they know that too.
Yeah. All right, Clark and Dan, how long would you age this for?
Because well,
my wine cellar is my trunk.
See, I think the average consumer, the average consumer doesn't want to put these things away for a long time, and I think this would be beneficial in about 2 years. We'd be just about right, three perhaps, but if you've got really, really good storage conditions, cold storage conditions, it'll last 6 or 7.
That's wow. What I think, yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, and the nose will open up more. You can see all that sort of lemon oil in the mouth. It's not really present in the nose yet.
Wow, you know, you see, and I used to say this with Ben Pearson. It drives me nuts because there's certain times I'm, and my palate has really gotten better over 9 years, but you know, I'll be thinking, I'll take a sip and I'll think about, what is that? I can't quite identify it. And somebody will say something like lemon oil, and I go, oh, my God, I totally get
power
it.
Power of suggestion. Yeah.
Yeah, furniture policy.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Osborne.
Yeah, baby.
Your thoughts?
I'm into it. You know, and I tend to like my like if I'm going to do something in this kind of a lighter style, like I don't want it to be like you said that it's that high alcohol or that overly oaked where you just feel like you're getting one note. That like you said, I get a little bit of that citrus. I get a grassy quality on the back end on the nose that I think is really like you say going to come to the forefront with a little bit of time. Just pleasant, really easy to drink. If it's in your trunk, Steve, take it out.
Well, wait till July. That's when I go into the trunk and go, see, what do we got?
Talk about contrasts. You brought a Sauvignon Blanc and a Gringolino Rosé, the only one on the planet, and it's fabulous.
Is that Joe Heights?
Yeah, it's Joe Heights.
Of course.
Who's Joe Heights? Who's Joe Heights?
Whoa.
I'm a radio host.
Joe was one of Martha's greatest Vineyard characters in the history of America.
Probably the most famous Cabernet around in the 70s.
Where?
It's the other valley.
Look at the color. Look at the color on that, Steve.
See, I thought Captain Phil said that Donald Trump is going to be the Joe Heights of his generation.
Yeah, I'm glad you were listening.
Joe Heights once said to me that he was really proud of the fact that he couldn't afford his own wine.
Oh, now that's a great quote. Okay, so Clark, what have you brought us?
Well, I opened up three interesting wines here. Let's start with that Russian River Pinot. Now, with Russian River, you're always looking for black cherries. We don't know why, but just about everywhere, even in the cold end of the valley over by the ocean or the warm end up by Healdsburg, you're going to get those black cherries. Now, you can see this wine really doesn't have a lot of tannin or structure to it, and yet we were able to age it. You know, after the normal 3 or 4 years, I just didn't think it was giving me everything it could give. So I just left it there, and we just kept waiting. And now, 8 years later, I just bottled it last October.
So what's the vintage?
It's a 2007.
And you're just now releasing it?
That's been out for about a year.
Fascinating.
So nice fresh black cherry, but all kinds of other development that you see here in marzipan and toasted marshmallow. And these are very interesting compounds. We want to get geeky. Those are called Maillard reaction products, and it's why we're addicted to bacon. You know, it's why we have Reform Judaism, right? those compounds.
I love this guy.
You know, smoked fish, cigarettes, baked bread, all these fire smells, we're addicted to them. Maillard reaction products are actually toxic to most other life forms, like yeast and bacteria. That's why we smoke fish, because it just kills everything. But we not only can tolerate them because of our genetic relationship with fire, but we're like totally addicted to them. And
wow.
I think this wine, it's pretty hard to put it down.
I'm addicted to cigarettes. So.
Man, this is a controlled fire.
You and some peyote would be
an 07.
But what do you guys think?
Well, it's very rustic and very what's the word that they use for sort of it's like a Wolverine. It's
Hugh Jackman on the nose.
Yeah, it's got a little of that sort of furry, dirty animal kind of smell. But what's really nice about it is that the black cherry really comes through directly, and then the aftertaste is seductive. I mean, it's really got that wonderful, esoteric. I wouldn't call it bacon as much as just smoked fish kind of smell, but it's good smoked fish. It's not the fish. It's the smoke.
Right.
The end on the palate is sticking with me.
Oh, it's very long, isn't it?
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. After tasting it,
you'd call this atavistic wine.
It's only about 12.5% alcohol, so that's part of the reason it ages so well. Wow.
Would you call that atavistic wine?
Sure.
Boy, another geek alert. This is a 2007... Pinot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It says on the label alcohol 14.5.
Oops. Well, if that's what it says, that's what it is.
I didn't mean to bust you, but.
No, good for you. Sorry.
But it was in quotes. So.
No. He's right. I'm busted.
These are the alternative facts.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Kellyanne Berger is with us. Oh, that's beautiful stuff.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It's winesmith.com. And
winesmithwines.com.
Okay, sorry.
Actually, the place to go for all my stuff is whoisclarksmith.com.
Really?
Yeah, and because I'm into a lot of other things. I write books and teach classes and all that stuff.
Very cool.
And a lot of wine and music pairing. So
that's a cool thing. You need to come in here at some point and do wine and music.
Yeah, that's a good radio act. I've done it on NPR a couple of times.
Well, we call ourselves NPR on acid.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, you need to come in.
It's
now,
quite apparent.
Winesmith at Bottle Barn, Barry.
I don't even know if you saw the retailers.
Yeah, we're way under half a million cases.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody small, if they sell everything.
And we made about 300 cases of this.
Oh, wow. Really?
And that's the case for 99% of wineries. They're never going to be on a retail shelf anywhere.
Yeah, it doesn't make
sense. It's all direct.
Right. We got to move the Sauvignon Blanc ahead. This is phenomenal.
Yeah, let's get into that.
That's
phenomenal. Move it to the front of the class.
Pardon me?
Move it to the front of the class.
Yeah, move it to the head of the class.
What you got?
Everybody, everybody got their dump cup?
Yeah. Pechmel Sauvignon Blanc is one of the greatest little projects nobody ever heard of. It's a small producer.
Why don't you pass around a little rinse there?
Yeah, that's good.
John Pepe is the winemaker. We have actually John is scheduled to be on the show here in about 2 weeks. John is a longtime winemaker in the Sonoma County area, but has only recently put together this project called Pechmel, spelled P-E-C-H-M-E-R-L. And M-E-R-L-E, sorry.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they've been in a few times.
Yeah, it was fabulous wine. This guy's really done a job. And this is Lake County fruit, and I love Lake County Sauvignon Blanc. I'm a big fan of that. Really exotic.
It's got that really good
tropical. Summer. It's got gooseberry. It's got a little bit of faintly cat pee and all that stuff.
Again,
cat pee is the nicest thing you could say to a New Zealand winemaker. This is I want to geek out. This is a file called Former Capto Pentanone, and it smells like grapefruit until it's really intense, and then it smells like cat piss.
Well, okay, listen to me, because Ben Pearson used to talk about this, and I'd asked him and. Dan has talked about it, but Clark, explain that, because people are listening going, wait a minute. Cat piss.
Yeah, I can't explain it. That's just what happens. Why?
But it's a good thing.
That very same compound would go both ways.
Well, it's the same thing as a skunk. But it's also roast coffee. It's this more captain smell. Skunk very high concentration
smells
is unattractive.
Like roast coffee. Yeah.
But far away from a skunk, like 2 miles away, it's roast coffee.
It used to be when I was going over the Bay Bridge, when they had that Hills Brothers plant going there.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, you know, you all had this experience that you thought you hit a skunk, right, on the bridge. You went, what's a skunk doing out here? And then you went, oh, it's the Hills Brothers plant.
It's all that mercaptan.
So the nose will play tricks on you.
All right. Explain how this was made. This is
a cat peed in a glass.
very simple.
Sorry, I don't have a litter box
this,
anymore.
I can
my
just
cat.
Tell you I one just... thing. I know is no oak, whatever.
Right.
Stainless steel fermented, cool fermentation to capture as much of this risky. If you fermented that any colder, it's going to be volatile. It'll be nasty. But this is nicely made.
Well, this is really a good Lake County Sauvignon Blanc, and Lake County is maybe the best place to make Sauvignon Blanc.
Really?
In California, and the reason is of the high UV.
Yeah.
What it doesn't have is pyrazines. It's and you know when you have pyrazines are the bell pepper aromas that come out when you have shaded fruit, and so there's so much UV up there. The soils are rocky, and so you don't get much canopy because there's not that much water availability. And there's also reflection off of the volcanic soils. So these clusters are bathed in sunlight all the time, and that knocks down the pyrazines. But then we have to be real careful, as you say, to ferment them real cold. These wines won't live very long. You need to drink this thing up.
No, this is one of those you buy, drink it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I
so
can do that.
I can do that too. I can put it in my trunk cellar and drink it tonight.
I mean. How much did it go for?
$12, $13.99.
Yeah,
something like that. Really reasonable. Big seller.
Wow,
this is terrific.
All
right,
really good Sauvignon Blanc out right now. That very similar styles to this.
Well, the 16s have just been released and almost instant wine, and this is a beautiful example. Just delicious.
Yeah.
Again,
it's not a vintage; it's an expiration date.
Got that right. Like a carton of milk.
Yeah.
Again, reiterate, Clark, what this is we're talking about before we have to take our break.
The Sauvignon Blanc?
Yeah.
The cap piss.
Well, I guess I'll tell you that this type of wine did not exist before World War II.
It was really atomic energy that allowed us to make basically Blue Nun. This is a child of Blue Nun. And that kind wine was invented by the Germans in nuclear piles. So without Hitler, you don't get wine like this. You get wine more
that
like...
That wasn't his intent.
No. No, but he scared the hell out of everybody. We dumped amazing amounts of resources into splitting the atom. And without that, we would not be drinking the kind of white wine that we drink today.
Amazing. Amazing. All right, it is 5:38 on your Wednesday drive. It's California Wine Country, the internationally award-winning show and radio segment, as I should say. Our guest today is Clark Smith from Winesmith and so much more. My co-host, Dan Berger, and, of course, Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn. And also with us is Drive Hall of Famer Steve Osborne, the great comedian who also works at Thumbprint Cellars and has got a couple special comedy shows coming up. Let's talk about this. First, at Thumbprint, when is that?
That's actually tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow night. So there's still some tickets available if people are interested. $10 gets you a seat and a welcome glass of wine. I got some comics, a local comic, Eric Bowman. I know Mike DeWald is a fan. I saw him at the So Your Friends Think You're Funny. He was the Simon Cowell-esque type judge. We've got Anthony Kay headlining from Modesto, which, of course, is a comedy mecca that we all know.
Well, if you don't have a sense of humor,
right. Source of material.
You can't live in Modesto unless you have a sense of humor.
Yeah, basically, right? If you're still alive in Modesto, then you've obviously learned to cope. but, no, yeah, he's a really incredible comic. He's been touring all over. I got to work with him in the San Francisco comedy competition this last year. He was one of the finalists. So looking forward to that. And, of course, April 1st at Provisions.
April Fool's Day at Provisions.
Absolutely.
My favorite new men's store in Montgomery Village on McGowan Drive, a proud sponsor of the drive. Yeah. So comedy in a men's hip clothing store.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's...
How is this going to work?
Well, I think it's going to work out beautifully. It's a really large space, as you know.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, they'll clear some of the clothing and all the different displays out, and then they'll put chairs in. But it's going to be an amazing night. There's beverages will be provided by Alley 6. There'll be some cocktails from that distillery. Thumbprint Cellars will be providing wine. Barrel Brothers Brewery will be there. It'll be headlined by the great Scott Capurro.
Yeah.
And
he's happening.
Yeah. Hosted by Casey Williams, I'll be featuring. And all of the proceeds will go to Face to Face here in Sonoma County. So that's going to be a really fun experience.
That's the nationally recognized nonprofit providing prevention and education services to combat the spread of HIV. And they really are a great organization. We love Face to Face. And all proceeds will go to Face to Face, including the adult beverages and stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. It is going to be a very unique experience. I would highly recommend coming out. And I would actually recommend getting your tickets sooner rather than later. I know it's a big space, but there's already been a lot of buzz, a lot of interest, just because comedy in a men's store, that alone is almost worth having to go check out. Because every girl's crazy about some sharp-dressed laughs. Am I right, guys?
Are you going to be with us Friday for needle droppings?
Yeah, I got to nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I know you don't. It's sad, but we love you. We'll talk about it again more as we lead up to the April Fool's Day show at Provisions Menwear. Again, a proud sponsor of The Drive.
Word.
What's going on besides the comedy show at Thumbprint?
So we've got some new things coming up. We're going to be probably introducing some new ways to present our wine, some new flights, some new options that really will help showcase what we do from a blending perspective, as well as our commitment to Sonoma County growers, the partnerships that we have with the different grape growers throughout, and we want to really find a way to showcase those. I mean, we have so many different wines, and it's great to speak to each one, but we really want to concentrate some of those efforts so people can. So if you're someone who really enjoys blends, you can enjoy an experience like that. If you really want to kind of have a taste of Sonoma County, so to speak, you can go that direction. So, yeah, it's going to be – I invite people to come on out. And lots of changes have happened over the last several months, and it's only going to get more and more exciting and innovative as we go forward.
Tell people how to get the thumbprint.
So we're right there on the square in Healdsburg on Matheson Street, 102 Matheson Street, to be specific. If you're in the square, just start spinning around until you see the big thumbprint, and you'll find the right spot.
And last time I was in Healdsburg on a weekend, there were a lot of people seeming to spin around.
Yeah, so we have yeah, well, now that they have the roundabout in place.
Oh, that's right.
Which is, as I say, I mean, what a brilliant idea, you know. In a town known for wine drinking, why not just say, why don't you guys just not stop when you're driving? How about that?
Best driving idea in man's history. That's just right. A fabulous idea.
Roundabouts?
Yeah, I love them.
Yeah.
Love them. If you don't know where to go, just keep driving and round in circles until you figure out which way you're going.
It is California Wine Country. Steve Osborne is here, the great comedian and marketing guy from Thumbprint. Also, our special guest today is Clark Smith from Winesmith Wines and Consulting. I love that his card that he handed me says, Clark Smith, wise guy. Very
from
cool.
From Jersey, you know.
Yeah, very cool. Barry Herbst is here, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn, our sponsor on California Wine Country. And, of course, my co-host, Dan Berger. Dan, what did you write about yesterday in the PD?
I wrote about people who go to restaurants and and can't figure out why they're in the restaurant because the wine program is not very interesting or, shall we say, reasonably priced. So I gave a bunch of tips on how to negotiate a typical wine list in a wine restaurant where the wine program is not intelligently done. And that's always a trick, and I always get nasty letters from restaurant people. But
of course you do.
That's the way it is. If you didn't have a thick skin, you weren't in this business in the first place.
Exactly. Okay, so this rosé, Clark.
This is from Barry.
Barry brought this, right. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Joe Heitz, we were talking about him earlier, iconic figure in the wine business. Dan looked it up, I guess. The winery was first releasing wines in 61,
but they planted this vineyard in 47, and it was Gringolino, which nobody else grows in California. I think there's maybe one other vineyard.
There's probably a few, but not many.
Yeah, and
more in Italy.
Gringolino is an interesting grape variety. It has virtually no color. You can make a dark red wine out of it, but you have to work your butt off to make a dark color red wine out of it. Otherwise, it makes rosé, and it makes a rosé that's so good that the Italians import this.
Nice. Really?
Seriously. They like this wine, and it's delicious.
It is delicious.
It's light and elegant. It's full of cherries and bright fruit. It's dry. There's no sugar here.
Plenty of acidity.
Loads of acidity, but it's masked by the fact that there's enough weight on the tongue, so it sort of carries itself. And with a certain degree of style, and this is a wine with top hat on. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is really a classy rosé that really requires a little bit of understanding. This is not one of those things you just simply quaff in front of a barbecue pit. Here's a wine to go with some real serious food.
But
Barry, what's your price?
But great.
Oh, great flavors. Yeah.
But no, wait a minute. Great in the summer at the pool.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
still
fabulous.
Refreshing.
Just imagine this with some grilled shrimp or something like that.
Sure.
But I want to dispel a couple of myths about rosé. One of them is that it's a summer drink. It's not a summer drink for me. I really like this all year round. And in France and in the UK, they drink more rosé than white wine.
Really?
The other thing is that most rosés, and certainly including this one, are much better with a little bit of age on them.
Yeah, and time in the bottle helps this wine, actually.
Yeah, it's a little mute in the nose right now. Tons of flavor by mouth, and that kind of shows you that you know, 2 or 3 years from now, it'll just bloom. And so you know, Americans think that a rosé has to be fresh, and they won't buy it if it's more than a year old. That's when they're just getting good.
And you've got that problem at Bottle Barn, don't you, Barry?
Yeah, we're trying to change people's perceptions, but once, like, when the 16s all come in, most of the 15s will have to go on sale, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate for you.
Yeah, for the consumer.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, look at our closeout card.
Yeah.
The 15s will be just hitting their stride, and but unfortunately, the perception is got to focus on the fresh, new vintage. So.
Yeah, and it's really a shame because from the winemaker's perspective, it means that all our other wines we sell all year round. The rosés have to move in May.
So they make the summer because people think they're dead September 1st.
Right.
Maybe a little bit for turkey. You'll see retailers begging you to drink rosé with your turkey.
Yeah.
And then it's all over, and they're missing the really good part.
And that's a column that's coming up in the Press Democrat in about 2 weeks.
There you go.
A rosé thing for...
Older rosé is your best friend.
And, Barry, what's the...
I think this comes in around $17.99, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I mean, I don't think anybody's made rosé any longer than this guy.
No, this is probably the oldest rosé in California, and still one of the best. One of the best.
Steve's, tipping his glass, as we all do, to look at the color. And what are your thoughts, sir?
I love the color. It reminds me of Plastic Man's uniform, and I think it's fantastic. this is a great wine. I mean, the thing is, there are so many myths and misconceptions about rosé, and I run into that, at Thumbprint all the time.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, what I hear a lot is people are saying, I think people are making better rosés now. And I'm like, no, I think you're just opening your mind.
There
to
you go.
The concept.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and we've talked about this on this segment for a long time. And yesterday we had Gene Arnold Sessions on our Sonoma County Vintners segment. And we were talking about that same thing with rosé. And as Ben Pearson used to say, men are not flipped out about being seen drinking pink wine anymore. You know?
I think the entire dynamic of wine purchasing has changed in the last several years.
Yeah.
And part of it is the youth and the experience that they have with their parents who were knowledgeable. And then there are the people whose parents never drank anything at all and found, hey, this is something I can do that they never did.
Mm-hmm.
So we're finding a
lot.
Well,
the other thing is that the reason the French love dry rosé is if you're going over to somebody's house and you don't know what's for dinner, rosé is never the wrong choice.
Right.
It's the most versatile wine.
I like that.
That's a great call.
Mm-hmm.
Clark, you got this incredible Cabernet Franc here, and I am so thrilled
that you
brought it.
Well, again, Lake County, Cab Franc is kind of known for having piercings, for having that bell pepper, and you don't get it at all in Lake County because of the UV. This is on a volcanic soil. It's an interesting vineyard because it's kind of a mountain volcanic vineyard, Diamond Ridge, but it's right next to Clear Lake, so there's a lake effect, which means you don't get any raisining, and it really preserves this bright white cherry aroma.
This is exactly where Cabernet Franc would do better than Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah.
No question about it.
You sent this down to Australia for the Six Nation New World Shootout.
Right.
Named it as the best Cab Franc in California. I don't think it's the best Cab Franc in the United States. There's some awfully good things in New Jersey.
There are a few things, but
really?
Yeah. Virginia is doing a good job with it. We had the Pollock the other night. It was fabulous. But other than that, boy, this is really up there.
And this is a wine that has tons of minerality that's coming from that volcanic soil. And that's the energy that seems like acidity, but it's in the throat. And that makes the wine age a long, long time. So this was 6 years in old wood. And really is just beginning to show its stuff. So
you still have a little of this to sell?
Yeah.
How much is it?
Yeah, we've got about 200 cases, and it's $40.
It's a bargain.
It's nice.
It's a bargain for that. You'd pay $250 for a bottle of Napa Valley Cabernet that has this kind of character to it, and this is a bargain for that.
Thanks.
Again, what year? And reiterate
it's
for our listeners.
It's the 2010 Winesmith.
Wow.
You just get it at, like I said, whoisclarksmith.com, and it's all right there. and I will mention, I do a lot of work with wine and music, and the best way to drink this wine is in the dark, with Bruce Springsteen's Jungle Land playing very loud on the loudspeakers and something on fire.
All right, listen, Mike, we got to get Clark in and with some other folks and Dan to do a wine and music pairing.
And fire.
Yeah,
sure.
Get the fire. What the hell?
Let's get a jacuzzi in here, Mike. Let's get weird.
Full primal instinct.
That is beautiful.
That's a pretty wine.
Clark, how do people, do you still do wine and music pairing?
Oh, sure. I did a big thing about it. I did the Fundamentals of Wine Chemistry over the weekend, and all these winemakers came from all over the country, and even some from Portugal. And the night before, we did this wine and music workshop. I've done it 1,000 times, I guess.
Wow.
Wasn't my idea. Don Blackburn was the guy that came up with this.
What a genius he was.
He really was. Yeah.
So you go to who the F is Clark Smith? No.
Yeah, right, the shorter version.
Who the hell is, what is it? Clark's,
who is Clark Smith?
.com.
Where in your mouth is Clark Smith? .com.
Clark Smith is here from Winesmith Wines and Consulting. Clark, wait a minute, hold on. Who is ClarkSmith.com? That's where you need to go. These wines are amazing. He's also an author. He wrote a book called Postmodern Winemaking, Rethinking the Modern Science of an Ancient Craft. We don't have a lot of time, no. Clark. Tell me about this book.
Well, I really think there's kind of a bad marriage between winemakers and wine lovers that I'd like to heal. There's a lot, you know, the natural wine movement is kind of promulgating this mythology that better wine is made when the winemaker doesn't get involved, and that really is bullshit. Can I say that on the air?
No. What do I care?
It's unlikely to be true. So anyway, I like, you know, there's a lot of technical stuff in there because it's me talking about how wine really is made and how it's structured, and then just trying to bring us together and encourage winemakers to tell the truth about what they do and be proud of it.
Beautiful. All right, and it's available probably everywhere.
You got time for one more wine?
Yeah. Actually, we got 2 minutes. I just got the 2-minute mark.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's do this real fast. This is a Saint Laurent. I told you California is really, the air is too dry here. This is why our Brixes are on ahead. But Saint Laurent comes in. Saint Lawrence was martyred on August 10th. So this is a real early harvest variety that's only grown in Austria and the Czech Republic. Did you get some?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Really interesting grape variety. It's grown in Carneros by Dale Ritchie. And
is it like a Pinot? Or?
I think it's kind of like a... You know how Eastern Europeans have a slightly cynical personality? This is kind of like a cynical Beaujolais. It's got a lot more depth, but it's very soft, wow. Very rich and dense.
Completely soft.
A great example of aromatic integration. And it also gets... Most red wines don't do well if they have high acid because it means more saliva, and that makes the tannins more grainy, interacting with the salivary protein. But this wine doesn't have that problem, so it's got great acidity, and because the tannins are so soft and pillowy, it works real well. So it's a great little picnic wine.
Nice. All right, we only got a minute. Dan, comment?
I was really thrilled when I called Clark this morning and he was available because he is as crazy as they get, and... Thank God for that. Clark is one of the geniuses of our time and deserves to get more credit than he's ever gotten.
All right. And he's going to bring his barbershop quartet in to sing on this show. I can't wait for that. Quickly.
Love to do it.
30 seconds, Steve Osborne, tomorrow night comedy at Thumbprint.
That's right. Come on out to Thumbprint Cellars. There's still some tickets available. You can get them online. You can go find us on thumbprintcellars.com. $10 ticket gets you a seat and a welcome pour of wine, and you can get wine by the glass. You can get bottles for the table, whatever it takes to get you lubed up to laugh. That's tomorrow night.
All right, I'm getting 10 seconds now. Dan Berger, we'll see you next week, and hopefully you, Barry Herbst, the wine buyer at Bottle Barn.
I will be out of pocket next week. Sorry.
All right, well, we'll see you soon. And Clark Smith, Winesmith, and Steve Osborne. Clark, we will see you again. We'll...